We are now joined by the KYMN National Security Correspondent, Mr. John Olson. Hey, John, how you doing this morning, sir?
Good morning, gentlemen. Good morning.
We were talking off air. It's we should mention every person associated with the Navy since about 1986 should probably just stand, take a deep breath, and a moment of contemplation, because the Iceman Val Kilmer has passed away at the age of 65.
Yeah, that guy was an amazing actor. Tremendous range. Lots of different movies that he was in that he was really an impressive individual on screen.
Right. Of course, best known for his role in Top Gun. All right. Hey, you sir, were it's nice to know that some people are noticing your acumen. You were interviewed in the Star Tribune last week to talk about Signalgate a little bit.
Yes. John Rash reached out to me. He had talked to me in the past. We've had some, you know, run-ins with each other, you know, all for good things.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, you were a career intelligence, weren't you? What do you think of this Signal app thing?
Yeah.
And so we just had he said, can I record what you say? And I said, sure. So we had about a 30-minute just sort of, you know, shooting the breeze kind of a session. and I thought he might take one or two quotes out of there and talk about the article. And then when it came out, I was like, I was sort of blown away how much of what I had talked about he decided to put in print. Yeah. So if I had known that he was going to quote me so extensively, I would have tried to sound more professorial rather than just hanging out with my friends and talking, you know.
You came across very well. I promise you. But that was a very interesting article.
Well, that was mostly because John Rash is a tremendously gifted writer.
Well, you know, speaking as someone who's done some of those interviews like that before, when you've got great source material to work with and you can just sort of ask a question and get out of the way, that's those stories write themselves. So,
you know, the funny thing is, you would have thought that the national security team working for the president would have learned their lesson from this Signal app kerfuffle.
Yeah,
and the Washington Post just put out another story where apparently this came out last night, where Mike Waltz, his national security advisor, and a bunch of other folks on the team have been using their personal Gmail accounts to send sensitive information around. In other words, they're not using their official accounts for the Official Records Act and everything that has to go in and be tracked by the U.S. federal government. They're using their personal accounts.
They're
this
going
is completely illegal.
They're going through Google to do it.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Shocking.
Yeah.
It's shocking.
Yeah. But you know, Donald Trump won the presidency in 2016 on the back of Hillary Clinton sending emails just exactly like that.
Yep. It is concerning, my friend. It's concerning.
It is concerning indeed. All right. Hey. You and I were talking a little bit last night, and you brought up some pretty interesting topics to talk about. So I want to get to these. First of all, the earthquake in Myanmar, which at 7.7 has got to be. I mean, it doesn't get worse than that. I mean, the people that are suffering through that are. I mean, it's as bad as it gets. You add to that Myanmar is under the rule of a military junta, which by all accounts is one of the most draconian governments in the world. And you got a note here that they started attacking villages within hours of what's going on there. What happened?
Yeah, so the military junta has been pretty aggressive in trying to put down any resistance to their rule. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I, the real expert on this whole situation, frankly, is a professor in the political science department over at Carleton College, Thun Mint. Mm-hmm. All the way back to 1988, when Thun Mint was a student himself, he joined the student protest movement, trying to bring democracy back to Myanmar, because, you know, the military junta has basically been in charge except for short periods of time, mm-hmm. for much of the last 40 years, 40, 50 years. So this the latest military junta that started, I think, in 21, they have been very, very aggressive. They've got a lot of support from China. Some of it is driven by economics, etc. But this, despite the fact you have this major earthquake, I mean, 7.7 is pretty big on the Richter scale. And I think what they have announced so far in the way of casualties is probably, I don't even know if it's a quarter of what actually happened.
Right.
I've heard reports on the news of trying to dig people out from the rubble from buildings that have collapsed and, you know, 100 degree heat with high humidity. You can imagine what that recovery effort is like.
No.
But the military junta is taking advantage of the opportunity to go after villages and populations that have been standing against them that are, you know, knocked down on their knees by this earthquake. And they are using that opportunity to press forward on their attacks to try and insulate the regime.
Wow. And, you know, the interesting thing about that is that they have reached out. The junta has reached out to the international community asking for help, too.
You bet. You bet.
And
unfortunately, that's one of those situations where the international community, unless you're handing food or water or carrying, you know, providing medical care directly to people, I have absolutely no belief that the military junta will distribute that stuff themselves, except to their own supporters.
Sure.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it is interesting too, because I mean, an earthquake like that, you know, that junta will all, I mean, that organ, the people that have ruled Myanmar, like you said, on and off for 50 years, they do it in a lot of secrecy and a lot of darkness. They don't let a lot of information. I mean, it's a little bit, very much like North Korea. They don't let a lot out, and you don't know a whole lot about what's going on in Myanmar. For the spotlight to be shown on them because of something like this, and they're like, oh, we don't care. We're just going to go after the people that don't like us anyway.
Pretty much.
Yeah. Okay.
They're saying the death toll exceeds 2,700. It's probably 10,000 or more, right. My guess, based on all the, you know, that I've seen on TV and whatnot. So.
Right. Okay. Speaking of China, I have a friend who very recently told me that they are going to Taiwan in a couple of weeks, and they're going to be there for like 10 days. Should my friend be nervous about going over there?
I don't think not yet. So Secretary Hegseth was just over in the Western Pacific, shoring up American alliances, I guess, with the Philippines, you know, Korea, Japan, etc. I mean, his presence over there says something about where the administration considers the threat to America coming from China. And China, obviously, every time we have a senior U.S. official that goes over to the Western Pacific, and even when they don't, because they're trying to put an awful lot of pressure on Taiwan right now, they have been launching regular operations trying to push up against China or Taiwan's air defense identification zone, and also their territorial sea limits, right? And in the case of Taiwan, it's really a sort of a 24 nautical mile zone that most countries have observed to try and avoid conflict. Just yesterday, there were 71 Chinese military aircraft and 13 PLA, People's Liberation Army, Navy ships.
Wow.
That were sailing around Taiwan, putting pressure on the Taiwanese government and military. So, and this is becoming kind of routine. The challenge, of course, is that the Taiwanese Air Force does feel compelled, their national security leadership team does feel compelled to respond. And the PLA Air Force flies sorties around Taiwan up against the air defense identification zone. The problem is the Taiwanese Air Force is significantly smaller than the PLA Air Force, and it's indigenously produced fighters, etc. So they go up and they fly over and over and over again. And the more you fly a combat jet, the more maintenance you have to do on it. So the Chinese are wearing them down over time, and the Taiwanese may be harder pressed to respond authoritatively if an actual combat situation arises. If you remember a lot of the discussions we had on the old National Security This Week show, mm-hmm. experts we had on talking about China, the big date is 2027. That is sort of when Xi Jinping ordered the military to be prepared for operations. And if you look at all the things that have been coming out in the news in the way of aircraft carriers, essentially, they've got three aircraft carriers now that can fly combat jets. One is still, Fujian is still working through some training at sea. But now they've got these essentially mobile barge-like things that they can bring up to the shoreline. For those of our listeners here who are World War II history buffs, yeah. you may remember that in the invasion at Normandy, the Allies had worked out a way to bring lots of supplies ashore very, very quickly once the beach had been formed. And they used something called mulberries, which were like these floating piers to create artificial harbors. The Chinese have built something along those lines to be able to bring ships close to shore and very quickly move their tanks and armored personnel carriers, et cetera, off of their ships and onto the Taiwanese shore should they choose to do so. They've also ordered a million suicide drones. They've learned the lessons of the war between Russia and Ukraine and the value of these UAVs, these unmanned first-person view drones, mm-hmm. and they've ordered a million of those to be built. Well, Chinese manufacturing has shown it can do those kinds of things at high volume. So if imagine a million suicide drones being flown at Taiwan.
Oh, my God.
Not all at once, obviously, but Steve, even if you just throw 1,000 at a time at a sortie, that's a heck of a thing for the Taiwanese to try and defend against.
That is. This is kind of a complicated question, but when Russia invaded Ukraine, one of the things that people talked about was the fact that Taiwan or China was watching this very closely.
Oh, you bet.
With the U.S. Support of Ukraine, shall we say, sagging, does that send a message to China, or do you think the Trump administration will remain resolute in its defense of Taiwan?
I think that is a great question. and here's the thing. China, they think, I believe, in the long term, right?
Yeah.
They're on their 14th five-year plan right now.
Yep.
The Chinese Communist Party uses these five-year plans to keep moving the country forward. This might be the 14th five-year plan mm-hmm. in what is a 100-year grand strategy adopted by Chairman Mao. And we don't know that because a lot of that is kept, contained, in secret inside China.
Right.
But China has watched America for the last 30 years. They know how much resolve we have demonstrated in an international crisis. By backing out of Afghanistan, which the Trump team negotiated and the Biden administration carried through,
mm-hmm.
the fact that we've sort of backed off our support for Ukraine to a significant extent, I am not sure how our allies in the Western Pacific, what they make of the current Trump administration and whether or not American resolve is there to defend Taiwan. I will say this. Taiwan has actually purchased from U.S. defense contractors pretty high-end equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And our American defense contractors are 4 or 5, even 6 years in arrears in delivering that combat equipment and munitions to Taiwan to meet the need.
Cool.
Obviously, we've been delivering a heck of a lot of stuff to Ukraine since the Russians invaded, and certainly Israel after October 7th.
Sure.
But Taiwan still has not received the things that they purchased, and that is deeply concerning to me.
Yeah, it might be time to make Taiwan a bit more of a of a priority. Yes.
Yeah. Turn it into a porcupine, right? So that
exactly.
China looks at it and says, this might be more than we want to tackle, yeah. Right?
You know, the can we just talk for a second about the Chinese Navy, the People's Liberation Army Navy?
Yeah.
I've heard people say, it's just a hard thing for me to swallow. That the United States no longer has the most powerful Navy in the world, that China has overtaken us. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I don't agree with that. I think the U.S. Navy is still by far the most powerful on the face of the planet. I mean, our aircraft carriers absolutely one-on-one outmatch what the PLA Navy has produced.
Okay.
Our combat pilots are far better trained. I think we have far better equipment. Our combat pilots have experience. I mean, there's not a ton of experience in shooting down, you know, cruise missiles and drones and stuff like that. But it's still live fire training.
Yep.
In off Yemen and even supporting Israel in attacks from Iran. So we have been flying and experiencing combat operations for a very long period of time. When was the last time China was in an actual war?
That's a good question.
A war at sea. Now, we haven't really had a war at sea in a very, very long time, but we understand how to do those things. Now, that doesn't mean China isn't training really, really hard. Navy, Air Force, ground forces, rocket forces, they have fundamentally changed the structure of their military into an integrated, coherent approach, mm-hmm. kind of like what we've used for a very long time. Mm-hmm. But, having that on paper, training with it every day is not the same as actually carrying out combat operations.
Right.
Because, a plan is useless, but planning is everything.
Right.
Because the plan doesn't survive first contact with the enemy, but the planning process to think through all the things that could go wrong is very, very valuable for military personnel.
Interesting. Okay, well, that makes me feel...
Yeah, the other thing, too, and I'll end on this, topic.
Yeah.
That's a 100-mile strait that the PLA Navy has to cross.
Yeah.
To start putting sizable combat power on the shore in Taiwan. That's a huge challenge.
Okay. 100-mile strait. I thought it was closer than that, but all right. Yeah. Okay. Finally, the U.S., we lost 4 soldiers in Lithuania.
We did. We did. 3 have been identified. A 4th has yet to be recovered, as I understand it. So these were... 4 soldiers who were essentially M1 Abrams tank maintainers, mm-hmm. and they were on sort of a training operation in Lithuania, and a heavy vehicle, armored vehicle, broke down. They were sent out to repair the vehicle and get it back into garrison, and unfortunately, they ran into a peat bog. And they themselves were in a heavy armored vehicle, something called a Hercules.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly how much it weighs, but it is a heavy vehicle. And when they hit this peat bog, they immediately sunk down into the peat bog. When they found this vehicle, it was in 15 feet of water.
Oh, no.
And my guess is it went in and sunk immediately, and it's heavy mud and muck and whatnot, and they just were trapped in there.
Oh.
The recovery operation that's going on right now is pretty significant. As I said, 3 of the bodies were recovered. It was actually a U.S. Navy dive team sent in from Spain that helped Polish and Lithuanian forces and other American forces that were there to recover these guys. It's an absolute tragedy. We, unfortunately, training for war, to be prepared for war, is a dangerous business in and of itself. And we lose American service members, unfortunately, on a regular basis because of the hazards of training for war. But I had an old Navy SEAL master chief tell me that this is not to make light of this situation, but he told me a long time ago, the less you bleed in peacetime, or the more you bleed in peacetime, the less you sweat in war,
well,
is the way he framed it. But this is a guy who'd done three combat tours in Vietnam as a Navy SEAL, so he can get a different perspective on life.
And maybe
this is just it's a tragedy. I mean, you're running around in maybe unfamiliar terrain. They may not have realized there was a bog there. And unfortunately, those four soldiers have been lost.
That's tragic. Absolutely.
It is.
All right, John, 20 minutes just flies by talking to you. So I really appreciate this.